trying to connect with each other online. And now it's almost like you have a schedule that's busier than when we were in real life, walking out and about. So, you know, I hopefully won't add too much to that for you, but for you to be in a position where you can capitalize on this very surreal and unique situation, which also, you know, is an opportunity to transform because people want to connect. So it's called Managing Your Brand PR. Not everyone's happy or comfortable with the term brand, but I believe in sort of taking ownership and reframing it and using it in a way that works for you. We'll get through, we should be able to cover everything. This is more overview with some prompts. And yeah, please send your questions through whenever something comes to mind. Don't sit with it. And just to say, I'm going to share my screen. The thing is, when I share my screen, I won't see you. And I'm very facially expressive. So just bear in mind that I can't see you, so I don't know. And I can't see myself as well. But I will pop out occasionally. And like Indigo said, you'll be able to access the resources afterwards. And anything else that comes up, I'll answer as much questions as I can. But anything else that comes up, I'm happy to sort of respond to afterwards. Okay, so let's just get this started now. Okay, and let me just make sure I've got the chat so I can see as well. All right, can you see everything clearly as just one slide? Is that all right? Everyone, can they? Yeah, okay. All right, so. Said a bit about me already. Just to say that, you know, I'm sort of wearing also a media hat and a communication strategist hat in terms of what I'm going to sort of communicate with you and to you today. So why this topic? Okay. Right. You're writers, you're illustrators, you're creators, you're artists, and you're sort of putting your work in a public space, obviously, but digitally primarily at this moment. And it's challenging time. It's a surreal time. But also, I think it's important for you not to lose sight that you still have to have boundaries and have some protocol about what you're putting into the space to make sure that you are representing yourself as clearly and as authentically as possible, and that you're not feeling an impulse or a compulsion to be seen and be out there. Because a key part of protecting your brand, managing yourself as an artist in this type of space at this time, we can't require some reflective space and planning. So some of the things, and it's funny because people sometimes don't make that connection. They think, oh, right, PR, that means I've got to sell myself. And normally sell yourself does sort of indicate that you're going to have to be forced to be inauthentic. And that's not true. So, I mean, it's important for you, who are you and what you represent, to be clear about that. Your professional and personal values. And as we go along, explain why those things are important, because ultimately it's about you connecting with others, not just in terms of audiences and readers and buyers of your books or your products, but also it's about people who then buy into who you are and what your brand is, and then go out and just spread the word, which is the type of space we're in at this very moment in time. How do you want to be viewed? Because you've got control over that. And why do you want to be viewed in that way? Why is it important to you? How do you position yourself instead of being positioned by others? And bearing in mind the climate we're in at the moment, where all of a sudden the narrative around COVID, because we can't, you know, ignore the fact that we're in this environment and will be in this space for a significant period of time. But the fact is, already what's coming to light is that there's, you know, what was once presented as an indiscriminate virus is highlighting the pre-existing inequalities, because it's disproportionately affecting us as people of color. So within that, so you're not just operating in your space, but you're also operating against that massive narrative that is about you, but not about you personally. So hence the importance of being positioned yourself rather than being positioned by others. Visually, what's going to represent your brand? So if you've got a book, yeah, people may know the cover, but they need to know who's produced this. Why have they produced this? Why should I read it? Also, in terms of you managing and promoting yourself and your brand, who do you want to follow and why? And also, when you connect with them, what are you saying? What do you want to say? Okay, so understanding PR would help. So I think a lot of times people presume, you know, because we're in this environment, there's so many people I know who are operating in this space as creatives of color. And I want, for example, social media, I'm jumping the gun a bit because we are going to look at social media, obviously, in this climate. But they actually, if they drill down, they're not really sure about hashtags and how really to use them. So they're on there, but they don't fully understand how these platforms can really benefit them. And within the context of PR, which I think everyone who is putting something, a product or themselves into the public space really needs to understand, because you're in a space where other people understand it. So you don't want to be putting yourself at a disadvantage. Okay, this is, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to say it, and I know this is being recorded. This is such a boring definition of PR, but it is the official definition of PR, and it took forever for the Chartered Institute of Public Relations to come up with. But it's there for you to read. I'm not going to go into it in great detail now, but the key thing, if you notice, keywords will jump out: discipline, reputation, influencing, opinion, behavior. All right, so I've taken a different approach slightly. Public relations is about the business from my point of view, and others, and I agree with them, it's the business of persuasion, reputation, and storytelling. And I don't want you to look at that and think, all right, does that mean I'm going to act like I'm an underworld boss, which is sort of forcibly persuading people to take notice of you and make up stories? Not at all. So why is it about being persuasive? Why is it about managing your reputation? And why is it about storytelling? Because you're trying to convince your followers, readers, viewers, sometimes people you, often people who don't know who you are and know you or what you represent, and usually outside your sphere of influence, to support you, to buy you and buy your products, and to support your viewpoint or outlook or perspective, and to actually recognize your achievements. So when you think about that, I think if in this sort of more informal presentation, it's hopefully paying to your strengths, because you're all storytellers, either through words or through illustrations. So you're already, I feel, at an advantage there. Okay, so in terms of PR, so this is just like they say, you know, the adhere efforts, this is a science bit. So please, you know, send through your questions as well. So what are the five key ingredients of PR in relation to building your brand? You've got to know your target audience, because a lot of the time when you know, when I ask people in relation to that, they say everybody, no, because then you are going to be incessantly trying to get your work out in a very broad way that will be labor intensive, not focused, not targeted, not niche, in a way that's going to benefit you. And that feeds into the second key ingredient, which is about being realistic about your goal setting. Set them small but focused, and a way that you can manage around all the other things that you're doing. You've got to develop your message. And so what are you saying at any given time? So you'll have messages that relate consistently to who you are as a writer, in terms of your approach, your style, the genres that you're interested in. Those will be what we call a constant. But in terms of your response to maybe the climate at the moment, in terms of your response to COVID and the pandemic creatively, what are your messages as a creative in that space at this particular moment in time? What are your messages around a particular book that you have written, you put out, and it has a very unique point of view? So what would your messages be around that? About why we need to read this book, or why is this book significant in a sea of a saturated environment in terms of books that are published every year? Who else is doing what you do? Who's your competition? I always put peers, because I think not everything's always in relation to a very strict, you know, capitalistic business model. But who else is doing what you're doing, or who else is doing it in a way that you really appreciate and like what they're doing, and what can you learn from them? But also, what's your point of differentiation? And also it's important to stay relevant. Sounds like, you know, being down with the cool kids. I mean, the whole point is, whatever you're saying or doing, how does it relate to the target audience? How does it tie into particular trends or views that are around at the time? And that's where you've got to do a bit of research yourself. And again, let's be honest, with Google, you can sort of look up and get information on everything and anything. But also, if you're on social media, just being an observer and just looking at where the discussions are online will help you as well. So are there any questions at the moment that's come up as a result of this before I go into anything else?
No, not yet.
No? Okay, great. Okay, so what is your brand identity? Now, before I even move on, if you could just write down really quickly what you feel your brand identity is. If you say, I have no clue what that is, or you do have a clue, or even if it's something that you've not really yet formulated, but you'd like to. So just the first thing, don't self-censor. What's the first thing that comes into your head? So if you can write that down. Just about 30 seconds. Okay. I mean, without fail, Nike, you know, Nike or Nike. Straight away, you think, when you think of brands, you think of, you know, designers, you think of sports brands like Nike. But more increasingly, and particularly led by, when you think about it, artists of color, people like Beyonce, Rihanna. I mean, Rihanna, you know, when a person is a brand, when you just say their first name and that's it, you know who they are. It's usually associated with a name. So like I said, Beyonce, Rihanna, symbol, Nike, or design, the Mini car, the Mini Cooper. And how you know and how that's identifiable is that, you know, okay, when you see orange and you think of an airline, you think EasyJet. When you see an apple, even when you're eating one, without fail, you can think of Apple, you know, in terms of their products and their very well-known and identifiable brand. And there's an association and qualities that are associated with those brands, which is why what people buy into. So, and this helps whoever your target audience is to identify and distinguish between you and others. So you can say, I'm a novelist, I'm an illustrator. It's like, okay, great. But you need to add something else to say what type of illustrator you are and what type of author you are. And that's going to pique my interest and lead me to ask you more questions about what you do and why you do it. So in terms of brand identity, some of the things you need to consider, personality. So what is the public image, emotion or quality or value that is associated with your brand? So when you, as an artist and a creative, be it a writer or an illustrator, are promoting yourself, your skills as well, or including a product, that may be a book, or maybe artwork, what does it convey and conjure up in me? So by me associating myself with it, by me wanting to buy it, and I buy it because it's not just like integrity, but there is that quality. It's about the fact that it is culturally relevant to me, for example. It speaks to me as a woman. It speaks to me as a woman of color. It speaks to me as someone who loves music, who is someone who loves nostalgia. So, you know, those things may seem less concrete, but in terms of emotional connections to products, and that's what most big brands do, and that's how they ensure loyalty. So promise. So what guarantees come with engaging with your brand? And this is particularly important when you think about or you plan to crowdfund, for example, and we're going to look about crowdfunding later on. So by me buying your product, I know, or engaging with you, the promise is that you will get it to me in a timely manner, that I can connect with you directly. And so your brand, promise, for example, applies to not just a product, but you in terms of how you engage with people online and engage with your communities. The fact that your promise is that you upload content that's really engaging and original and thought-provoking twice a month, for example. And the thing is, once you make a promise, it's about being consistent. If you are going to change that for whatever reason, that you let people in on the decision for why that's going to happen, because you need to still bring them along as well as bring on board new people. So your USP, your unique selling point or proposition. So what is the one thing or more than one thing that you do incredibly and exceptionally well? And it may be not really obvious from what you put into the public space. It may be something else, but it complements what you do. And what are the benefits from, you know, following you? So what will I gain, you know, by buying your books and products? So if I buy from your website, does that mean then that I then get 10% off your next book? Does that mean that when you do a reading, you know, I get advance, you know, notice of a reading or product before it comes out? Or do I get a chance to trial something for free? Yeah. So these are sort of things that you need to make transparent and think about as well. Let's jump ahead. Okay, so I mentioned unique selling point. A lot of the time, again, I just wanted to clarify what that is. So it's what differentiate you, your product, your service, your company from those of your peers or competitors, and it singles you out in the mind of the people that you're aiming to reach. So a lot of time you want people to get in contact with you, to buy your book, and a lot of the time, and a common mistake is that people actually don't have a clear idea of who their target audience is for this specific product. Like I say, it could be a book or something else. It could be you being part of an initiative with somebody else. So how are you going to segment that? How are you going to then identify what is the appeal of this particular book, product, event to this person, to the people, the segment of people that I'm trying to target? Really quickly, Indigo, any questions?
No questions.
Okay, all right. Okay, so either you've fallen asleep or what I'm saying is still relatable to you, so I'll keep going. Okay, great. So now, if only things were as easy as this, that all your audience, you know, your target audience, say, hey, hi, great, you know, this is who I am and this is what, how I'd like you to engage with me, but we know it's not as easy as that at all. So what I've done over the next two slides is a breakdown of key questions that you can answer in your own time around target audience. So it's an initial checklist. So who will best help you achieve your goals? Because a lot of the time you'll find that some of your target audience, you have to get through a gatekeeper. So for example, if your book is targeted towards children or young people, you know, fine, TikTok, as you've seen, has blown up, and there's Snapchat and so on. So you may have to find ways to engage with those digital platforms to reach young people directly. But if your audience is younger than 16, for example, you usually have to go through a third party or a gatekeeper. It could be a teacher, youth worker, school, so on. So in this climate now, it's about what platforms are they using? And there's something I'm going to bring up around schools later on that may be of use to you, particularly if your focus and your work is on children's literature, fiction. So you need to have a tiered approach. So, you know, okay, I want to reach young people, but to reach them, I need to engage with teachers. And to engage with teachers, I need to be aware of the platforms they're on and offline. And also the language that they use, because you've got to get through that protective layer, which is they're protecting and representing young people or children. So you have to understand what their priorities are, what some of the challenges are, particularly in this environment, and also parents. And the fact that parents are now scoping and sourcing and sharing ideas about what is available online that will benefit them and their children. So this then gives you an opportunity to step out of your comfort zone, you know, depending on what your comfort zone is, to think about maybe doing audio for podcasts, engaging with YouTube and setting up a YouTube channel, Again, we'll look at that later on. But again, just by thinking about your target audience in a very clear way, but then not just thinking, I've got to get through to them, and then thinking, oh, how, and then give up. You've got to break down the route to getting to them. And for example, you know, there's loads of, what is it called? There's an organization, I think it's called First Shoots. Don't quote me. They're based in King's Cross. They work with young people. And they're amazing, and they're online. And they're very social media savvy, digitally savvy, but also they do great events. So a lot of youth-led organizations are like that. And they want things that will facilitate their young people to have sustainable lives. So again, it's like, well, how then can you position yourself to make what you do and your approach available to them? Okay, so in terms of the next one, just again, five things that you have to consider in terms of what you need to do to attract your target audience. So it's not just about them knowing about you, it's about you knowing about them. And again, I'll go to number five, for example. So what local, national, and international trends have a bearing on how your brand, the people that buy into your brand, and also your potential target audience, such as readers and buyers and booksellers, for example, how can they relate to what you have to offer through these trends? So again, a big trend is around homeschooling, for example. A big trend is around having increase in podcast usage and listenership. And I'll talk a bit more about that later on. And so how then can you engage with those platforms? Don't force yourself into those spaces if you haven't got the skills and you're not comfortable. But there's so many different entry points for you. And this is where you do your homework to find, okay, I'm not that confident. I don't particularly like being seen on screen. So, okay, do audio. And then, okay, if I'm going to do audio in this climate without the equipment, what can I do? So you've got Anchor, which is a good accessible and free podcast recording app, for example. So you just then collate your little plan about what's available, and then look at who else is doing it and doing it well, and then reach out to them. Because another thing about this climate, people are much more accessible. Even getting hold of your MP, actors, whatever, they're just far more receptive and approachable online at the moment, because we're in this is a global situation, a global pandemic. So yeah. So the value of social media, so I've talked about that obviously quite a bit. And and we know, even people who, trust me, there's so many people I know who like have avoided it, sidestepped it, delegated it, commissioned others to engage in social media on their behalf, or digital platforms, because it's not just about Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. It's also about WhatsApp and the video conferencing platforms like Zoom that we have to engage with. Even the phone, people are re-engaging with having conversations with people on the phone. So again, about crafting and curating your own package that supports your temperament, your goals, and your personality and your values. You know, so for example, you know, Facebook, fair enough, Facebook has, you know, also owns Instagram, but they, you know, you've got LinkedIn, obviously that'd be really useful. Now there's multiple functionality on these different sites, you know, in terms of being able to promote yourself and what you do. And a lot of people are looking for artists or doers or people who are proactive to help them deliver on particular things that are creative, but in a digital space, and amidst them learning about that digital space. And we're talking sometimes mainstream players having to work in a way that they weren't necessarily comfortable with, because, for example, publishers, a lot of them aren't necessarily brilliant online. They're going to have to be now. Whereas a lot of artists, especially poets, and particularly poets of color, are exceptional online. If you know, I think like Anthony Anaxagoru, Yomi Shodi, Debris Stevenson, who is, you know, not just a poet, but also a theatre maker. If you look at what they do online, and they're doing online in terms of letting you know about their craft, their approach, sharing their learning, and aspects, you know, of that can be monetized, like, you know, pay what you can and everything else. So it's an opportunity to build a whole new audience base through generosity, but through skill share. But what that does is allows you to bring them with you when we're on the other side of this. And they already will have bought into the things that I said that make you stand out in terms of your brand identity and the key elements of what's important in terms of PR, you know, in terms of your relevance and also your accessibility. So the interesting thing, obviously, now, you know, with, you think about that, that's a phone, but you would never believe it, isn't it? It's your one walking connection with the world indirectly rather than a phone. I don't know why they call it a phone now. I call it a smartphone. They should call it something else, really. All right. So now we're moving into digital PR, because the PR is talking about before and contextualizing for you really comes out of traditional PR where you engage with journalists. I mean, that's a whole other session in terms of how, because you still have to do that alongside digital. But at this moment, even journalists, you can access on digital platforms. And The Guardian and BuzzFeed, for example, but particularly The Guardian, have been very strong in dropping into people's timelines and feeds to ask specifically for input into stories that they're doing. So again, that's such a unique situation to be in. So you need to be aware of which journalists and which publications are doing that. But I think even a step ahead of that, which publications and media outlets would you like to feature on? And then follow those journalists, because they usually are putting a call out because they need different stories. And as a result of what's happened disproportionately in terms of COVID-19's impact on our communities of colour, all of a sudden they're reaching out to find us more directly, and particularly creatives, because they no longer can create content in the way they used to. So they need to co-curate and collaborate with creatives to produce content. So if they can see that there's something that you do already online or have the potential to do, or it's really clear what your work is and what your brand identity and point of differentiation is, they're going to contact you directly. You no longer have to chase them. So that's something just to bear in mind. So in terms of digital PR, you know, using social media platforms, networks and tools to interact with people online and to build relationships. And the only way this is possible is that you have the content there and you're having the conversations. And just to say about content, because you may feel I'm not in the world, you are in the world. You're just in the world, in a room, in a house, in a space, but you're connected. You still have who you are, and your thoughts and your creativity and your imagination, which is of value. So the thing about that is, how then are you someone who, are you someone who's willing to collaborate with others? Because that's something that helps you get more traction and a greater reach if you co-create and collaborate with someone. And the fact that you do that is very attractive to people. Why do they come together? So you're bringing two audiences together. You create something that's unique to and for your those particular audiences. And then as a result, there's a ripple effect that others say, I want to be part of that. And usually, without fail, they're going to circulate that. Nowadays, you don't even have to ask people, please retweet. They're doing it anyway. I'm sure you've noticed in your WhatsApp feeds that you are getting access to a lot more information than usual, and hopefully a lot more beneficial rather than nice cute cats videos. So in terms of digital PR, some of what we talked about before, but a key thing is, and this is shifting all the time, but there is a constant to it, constant nature to it, is that where do the people that you want to reach live online? Okay, because they live and operate in different spaces for particular reasons. So Twitter, if you want serious influencers, particularly in relation to politics and policy, and what we'd call, you know, the top line news issues and agendas from mental health to well-being, Twitter is for you because it's immediate. And obviously now with the 280 characters and the ability to upload, you know, viral video, viral content as well, incredibly valuable and useful. But if you want to reach parents, for example, if you want to reach other creatives, so Instagram, which at one point primarily was for entrepreneurs, but entrepreneurs of color were on there, and a lot of them were creatives like designers, fashion designers, graphic designers and others, and illustrators as well. And now it's been actualized in terms of the business model to connect people with your products for them to see, view, comment, and purchase. And so that's useful for you, because not only are you getting buyers and readers, so if someone's interested in Afro, like Afropunk or Afrofuturistic type stuff and fashion, it then lends itself to those people also being interested in particular types of literature or imagery. So if you are an illustrator and there's a particular approach, you know, when you think about Dapo and Look Up and the character who, you know, had her hair in cane rows and has a particular look and her spacesuit, she looked funky. So if you have a character that visually lends itself to those sort of communities artistically, they would most probably love to know about not just the character, but why did you create that character and what drove you to make her or him look in that, you know, or them look in that particular way. And then you can create and spark a conversation. You may show the link between, you know, these different worlds and styles, and write a blog post on it, for example. So don't limit yourself saying it's around publishing, it's around books, that's all it is. See what else you can feed into and connect to. And that's where, you know, it's useful seeing social media as a way to start a conversation and sustain a conversation. And people want that. Also listen and just observe what others are doing and why they do it and how they do it. This is also helping you to build your digital communities. Content curation, don't just think you have to have new originally, you know, created this morning content. Recycled content has a life and has a purpose and value on site. I mean, you've seen the hashtags which are going to come to you, like me at 20, you know, and as a result of you being part of those sort of discussions, you know, what music is influencing you at this time. If you notice, you've got people who are like everyone from Idris Elba, possibly, you know, Mallory Blackman on it, to your neighbor. So it's inclusive. It involves a range of people. So we're going to look at hashtags, but that's something for you to consider, you know, think about. Have you got content that you have not even put up online that you can use and link it to a particular story, or to generate a story, or invite people to come up with a story based on an image, based on a paragraph that you've come up with, or based on a moment from the past? You know, invite them to write something based on a prompt that you provide. So, and that's how they get to know who you are and your personality. Because people want to be creative and feel the need to be creative now, but they don't know how. So it's not always around, oh, I need you to buy from me. It's also just about, it'd be great just to know who you are and for you to get to know who I am. So sharing content, yours and others, but obviously be discerning, because how you share, what you share is also letting people know about your value and why they should connect to you. And I find that over the years, that's why people have followed, not just Words of Colour and myself, because there's certain things I know personally that politically I'm not happy about. And I will have those discussions in different spaces, but I'm very clear that online, I may retweet it, but I'm not going to comment on it in that way, or I won't comment on stuff on Words of Colour, but I'll comment on it in my personal capacity. So being able to make that distinction and make that impact on what you share and why you share it, and even commenting on why you're sharing it, you will see and watch, you see there'll be a spike in terms of who follows you, because it's almost like there's people who feel, I can't say this, but I wish someone would say it, and then you say it, but you say it in a way that's really eloquent or very funny. Not everything has to be incredibly heavy and serious, or very thoughtful, or thought-provoking. That is what's going to make people want to just follow you, and there will not be an expectation that you have to follow them back. Digital publishing. So what can you put out there yourself on, you know, your own website and using the different platforms that are out there that are free, usually up to a particular limit, and many are making, even Audible and others, are making a lot of their priced elements and packages free. And you know, you should look and see what is available for you to use for free that wouldn't have been the case pre-COVID. And also, people need to find you and know that you're around. So, you know, what are your keywords? You need to be making sure that if you have a blog post or on your platforms, that you have about 5 keywords that you know represent what you do, 5 to 10. and make sure that they you have used them consistently across all the platforms that you're on or uploading content to, because you need, and also having hashtags, which we'll come to, that makes it discoverability, makes it easy for people to find you. So any questions? Indigo?
No.
No, great, okay. So this wonderful woman I've got here, photograph taken by Alan McFarlane, who works with us, her name's Yasmin Abdel Majid, because sometimes it's better, you know, to show rather than tell. And she originally just trained as an engineer, not just, in Australia, as a Muslim woman, you know, the first in lots of different settings in her 20s, very challenging. She's an activist. She took on the Australian government. She's a collaborator. She set up organizations for young people around inclusion and activism. She ends up writing her memoirs when she's 24, 25. Her first, and then she's written You Must Be Layla, and I think she's done a follow-up now. So it's Children, YA. And so what all this has happened through her engagement, just not outside of her and her personality and her conviction and her values and her consistency, but she's utilized, and it's wasn't necessarily... It's almost like she's an accidental brand, I'd say, because she spoke up around racism and other things that were going on in Australia, she was positioned. And that was actually a difficult time for her, which she's been very public about. And we've had the pleasure of we collaborate with Yasmin. But then as a result of that, and through her healing process, and she came to the UK, how could I use this in a way that will connect me to other communities and spread the word about what other people are doing? But within that, to allow Muslim people, particularly young Muslim women, to show that they're multifaceted and they are creatives and they have opinions. And so, as well as writing and feeding to how that book was illustrated, she did a TEDx talk around the hijab. And I mean, it's over 2 million views. So all those, this is the journey. The engineer, activism, collaborator, then author, TEDx speaker, influencer. So all these things have a knock-on effect because of it being initially positioned by others and then putting the brakes on, reflecting, and then now she positions herself. And she's been able to do that through social media. So, and she's a prolific blogger. So I would recommend that you have a look. And it's not necessarily about, I mean, agreeing with everything that she says necessarily, although I don't think you'll find anything that would be remotely necessarily challenging. But if you look, and she back at her, and she archives her content incredibly well, to look at her journey and what she does and how she uses social media. And she's not on it all the time. She schedules when she's on there. And obviously being in lockdown, and she was doing a lot of book readings and everything else, she's had to completely do a 360 and think about what's going to be of value in this space, because she's generous and she's very outward facing about her content. So I think she's a really good example to look at and to get ideas about how you can promote yourself, because let's be honest, a lot of publishers still don't fully promote the authors if they're not now Bernie is getting a lot of support, obviously, but unless they're the real bigwigs, they're not like Margaret Atwood. You have to basically do it yourself. And I think most authors, in particular of color, will tell you that. Big thing, pictures. Pictures, 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 pictures. I mean, they say content is king, queen, and in between. For me, I am still amazed after 30 years that I still have to tell people to retake, resend photographs. And I'm talking from established artists right through to those who have a tech startup, amazing products. And I have to chase them and sometimes end up commissioning one of our photographers to take photographs for them. Everything from resolution or the busiest backdrop or half of their relatives in the picture. I mean, but seriously, this is a perennial and consistent problem. And obviously in lockdown, you know, you don't want everything to be a selfie, but I think, again, about the curation of images to illustrate what you do. And if you're not an illustrator and you don't have access to You don't want to use stock photos. A lot of stock photos, the challenge is a lot of the stock photos are taken in America. I've represented people of color in America, and you can tell there is something different about the black, you know, British, Asian, British, Chinese, British experience. It's very different, even visually, and even just in terms of the landmarks. So on these different platforms, whichever platforms, including WhatsApp, you need photographs. And also, even like I said about recycled content, the internet registers, and through search engine optimization as well, registers when content's been changed, and pictures are more likely to get a response on most platforms than just text, unless you are just someone who is just, you know, Oprah. So it's not a problem. You could put up one word, or Barack Obama, hi, and then it will, you know, it'll break the internet. So think about that. Think about how you want to be represented. You may not want your picture out there, but what then will represent you? So I've listed three royalty-free sites with really good photographs that you can use, because some of them are symbolic and just illustrate something you want to say. And Unsplash, you know, and has loads of pictures featuring people of color, because it's another challenge as well, finding really good photographs that you can use. And Shutterstock is good as well. Obviously, there's a cost, but if there's a situation where you are digitally publishing and you want a really good quality photograph, their rates are pretty good. Again, any questions?
No.
Okay. All right. So the power of the hashtag. So again, how to use this properly, and then especially now, this is just, I'm going to go back to discoverability. This is how people find you, but you don't want to overdo it. Even though I do notice you don't want your message or post to be hashtag led. It needs to, I still think, be at the end after you've contextualized why you're producing that particular post, or you want people's attention for whatever reason. So hashtags are basic. I put the link. This is really handy about how you use it, because before, hashtags was the unique selling point and point of differentiation for Twitter. And now, obviously, when Facebook realized it had to cave in, because there's a period where you couldn't put hashtags on Facebook, you know, so that competitive rivalry, and now it's everywhere. And so it's showing you, it's always been powerful, but even more so now. And a lot of the time, that's how people find you. And you can spark your own creative, political, social, fashion revolution, just like I mentioned about me at 20. Someone just came up with that. And then it's still going, because there's something about it that's accessible, that's fun, that can is inclusive. Anyone can do it, unless they're obviously 19 and under, because they're not 20. So you can see already they thought about who they were targeting for that. But the only sort of drawback of that is that you have to dig out Polaroids that you then have to photograph, you know, take a picture of or scan in to put it online. But the fact that people make the effort to do that speaks volumes about what the willingness of people, of what people actually want to engage with and connect with. And what I said earlier on about nostalgia, that's quite a strong value or quality or emotion that people connect to. So obviously hashtags, why? Allows you to connect your social media content to a specific topic, event, theme, or conversation, so that it helps you to have control over it. And it makes it easier for people to find you and engage with it, okay? Because it aggregates, you know, all the content under the same hashtag. So, and also if you want to create an original one, always do a search first. There's nothing worse than creating a hashtag and finding out that it's connected to a thrash metal group in Germany. I kid you not, that has happened once. I'm not getting into it. So, you know, yeah, do your homework first in relation to that. Just some tips about how to use it, and not obviously overusing it. Limit the number that you use. Don't string too many words together. But again, just looking at the power of it, this is just from 2016, just to show you at that point, because Oscar's So White is still relevant and still used, but in 2016, 250,000 times, you know, that's what Oscar So White was retweeted 250,000 times. Bring Back Our Girls, in relation to the young girls who were abducted, And so, and no one was taking it very seriously at all. And because they were black girls and they were African young girls. And then it came out, the hashtag, and even with the hashtag, Bring Back Our Girls, very simple. And the hour, ownership, just because they are black, it doesn't mean that they're not your girls, because this is a worldwide problem in terms of abduction and missing young people being used for, especially girls, for political means and ends. 6,100,000 times. And yet the hashtag was initially criticized by the mainstream for being too simplistic. I mean, you know, this is a serious problem, and yet this is what they were focusing on. So it shows you how much and how divisive sometimes hashtags can be. But what they're doing is showing where the debate is at, and it's surfacing some of the pre-existing inequalities. So it's incredibly powerful and transform the discussion and the activism and the visibility of the experience of young black women across the world as a result of this. And then, of course, Black Lives Matter, 12 million times in 2016. So it's worth it. Don't just contrive one and make it up for the sake of it. Know the impact. And some of the most powerful ones have come from communities of color. Like, you know, Mickey Kendall, if you remember her one about solidarity is not just for white women. And everyone looked at us and thought that was one of the most unwieldy hashtags, and I hope I've quoted that correctly, ever. But yet it's one of the most successful and like in the top 10 of hashtags of all time. And that came out of her justifiable frustration around how feminism was positioning women of color and the debates that women of color were locked out of. So that's more that obviously I'm presenting more at the serious end, but there's a continuum, and it's a continuum that you can contribute to and invest in. So, you know, hopefully that's something you can think about in terms of engaging with communities. Using digital platforms to diversify your income stream. Now, a lot of the time people think, okay, income stream, they're straight away, every single thing that they do has to therefore immediately generate an income. Not true. The whole point is, going back to the whole purpose of this presentation, which is around PR, which is around your brand, you know, raising your profile, managing your reputation, inform people who you are, being clear about your target audience. So to diversify your income stream, obviously, again, you've got to do your research and look at the platforms that will work for you. But a lot of the time, it isn't about monetizing things immediately. It is about testing and pilot. It's a great opportunity to test and pilot what would work. And also what works and plays to your strengths, as I said before. But you won't know unless you try it out. So, and also, if you're incentivizing it. So it's like, okay, look, let me just pilot this. Put it out. You see a response. People then feedback, just like what we're doing today through this session. Okay, not only do you get confidence thinking, I can do this, you are informing people that, oh, you're not just an author. You can, you're a great trainer, facilitator around storytelling, or you've maybe look at drawing or art in a different way. And so then people then will invariably say, oh, what else do you do? And then you say, oh, I've got lots of things that I'd like to do. And then you go away and think, no, I don't, but I'll come up with something that I'm interested in and that I think may work and that will also enhance my brand. So I think just have that in mind rather than thinking straight away it has to make you money, particularly in this climate when artists have had R&D money pulled. There's events that they're supposed to read at or speak, or school readings have been cancelled. So I think it's about transitioning and trying things on different platforms and graduating people, including yourself. So you offer something complimentary. Maybe the next one is, you know, pay what you can. And then maybe that moves into people wanting something one-to-one. And so you can work something out. And also things in kind, because it could be someone, they offer you support around design, around web development, for you helping them with a particular, you know, with their manuscript, because one thing that's definitely come to light, everyone wants to write a book or has a book. And that's a theme that's happened as well. So podcasting, that is something that you should seriously think about if you haven't thought about because that's the fastest growing medium at the moment, and it also translates and leads people onto other platforms. And what's interesting is about what people are primarily on listening to podcasts for, and a lot of it is around conversations, talk type shows, being entertained. I know someone who is a teacher, and obviously she's at home and she teaches primary school kids, but she was writing a book. She then set up out of the blue a YouTube channel, and she reads from the chapter every day, and she's doing the reading for children and parents, but then she offers them the opportunity to feedback on the characters and where she's writing the book, she's going along, where they think the book, the characters should go. So straight away, not only is she on there as a teacher, but now she's on there as an author. And then at some point, when she's ready to produce the book, she has now got ownership and buy-in from a range of people who didn't know her, including the parents and children, the parents of the children that she taught pre-COVID. So when she produces that book, and say she produces the book for December, and people have a bit more money, feel a bit more secure, she will be able to sell that book. And also, I would imagine people will say to her, when is the book coming out? We want to buy it. So again, about the journey, the fact is that just by making yourself available, using the platforms in an inventive way, this is what you can do. And you can do the same approach with a podcast where you do the reading, because if you don't want to be seen, that's something you can think about and do. Here in terms of what's happening with podcasts, 7.1 million. This is the number of people as of last year who are listening to podcasts weekly. And the fastest growing segment of people who are listening to podcasts is between the 25 to 35 age group. And so again, in terms of demographics and people trying to target, that's something for you to think about. And that increase, 24% increase, was over a 12-month period. So can you imagine now, when the stats come out for, you know, the period of March to May, I would imagine it's going to be pretty stratospheric. And in terms of what people are listening to, and actually, look, it's negligible, because 57% entertainment, and that's broad. So if you're a playwright, whatever, you can put something out, you know, and you can have different people. You could do, remember, podcasts are pre-recorded. You don't have to do them live. You've got live podcasts, you've got podcasts. So say if you wanted, you could approach some of the, a lot of actors aren't working and they are frustrated. They want to work and they want to be practicing their craft, and they appreciate that they may not get paid, but they want to be involved in projects. So there's an artist that you really like, and particularly, you know, theater artists and actors are very approachable, and there's some like Martina Laird is amazing, you know, who would be interested if you've got a piece of work that you're developing. And maybe what you do, you get them all to read their bit, and you have that edited into something that you could put out. So that's something to think about. Comedy. And so the top three is entertainment, comedy, and discussion and talk shows. So discussions. So you could do, you know, you and another artist, like say two of you who are on this webinar now, could come together and think about something to discuss, okay? And you can do it on your phone and record it on your phone, and then get that piece together. And again, if you want more information on that, we can, I can help you with that. So don't think because it's outside your realm of experience that it's something you can't do, because once you've got a smartphone, you can more or less do anything. And in fact, this is showing you that people are available and want to listen to these things. What can I say? Zoom. You know, if you didn't know about Zoom, because it was largely a business-to-business, you know, video conferencing tool. You know, schools are using it now. The UK government is using it now. I don't know whether that's necessarily a good brand endorsement. But it is something to engage with, because it's not going to go away. And its functionality and the ease and its ability to accommodate hundreds of people at one go means it's opened you up to a global audience in a way that's cost effective. And a way that they're still dealing with some of the glitches, particularly around ethics and protocol and security. But this, start thinking about your audiences elsewhere. The Black diaspora is significant, and there's a lot of artists of color who've gone overseas with British sensibilities in other countries so they could have a more sustainable career. they're available and there's a generosity of spirit and they can promote your work. And Zoom is a fantastic way to connect with others in different spaces on this, and a way for you to use it to not just build your brand, but promote your products, because this is a way for them to see you, hear your ethos, buy into that, and then in their spaces they can sell it or tell you about supply chains or in this climate how you can get your stuff out, what the best platforms are to use, or people who can complement you in the skills areas that you lack, you know, in terms of the African continent and so on, and the Caribbean, wherever. And as you look here, you can see that in the 2 months from when we had lockdown to April, and these figures are from May 2000, 300 million daily meetings on Zoom took place in April. Daily meetings, you know? Remember, those meetings are about anything and everything, which is a 67% increase between January and mid-March 2020. And 90,000 schools in 20 countries are using the platform. So remember, they would not have done this before. And why I put that on here is particularly as if you're, and I would imagine children's literature is your primary focus. Think about that. If schools now are much more accessible here and abroad on that platform, that means there's another way for you to engage with schools, to tell them. And also because now their mindset has changed culturally around what they can expose themselves to in terms of security and also protection issues and confidentiality around and safeguarding of children. So the fact now that you have a medium where you can showcase your work and you can contact them, you can contact, go to their website, contact them saying, showing them your work, direct them to your website. And then they, and because one thing that they're not gonna be able to do, is it, is have author readings in the schools. So I would imagine they're putting feelers out more than ever to access reading for the kids, because the education and levels of great concern in globally. So this, the fact that this many schools are on there, okay, in the short space of time, because trust me, they were on there before, this is an opportunity for you as well. What can I say, WhatsApp? I'm gonna say very little, because at the moment, the amount of things I know that have taken off, especially around, again, coming back to education, around what children can access, what parents can access, WhatsApp has just been invaluable, and the immediacy of it and the fact that people can share it in their networks and WhatsApp groups. So don't forget the use and value of this as well, without fail. And then just coming to wind up shortly, crowdfunding. I'm sure if you're not aware, today, while we're speaking, there is a webinar with Amy and Valerie from Nights Off and Jacaranda Books around the state of indie publishing, particularly in terms of indies of color. And Kit Katless from Influx Press is moderating that. And they have an inclusive indies hashtag for a crowdfunding campaign to raise 100,000 for their sustainability, because of course, who gets hit the hardest when these things happen? It is organization, companies, and creators of color. You know, it's clear, and even anecdotally what's coming through, because they don't have the weight of a big mainstream behind them. So crowdfunding campaigns were waning in terms of popularity and interest, but people felt it was just too much work. But because of people wanting to buy in, especially in the world and what's happening and people having questions, and particularly young people around privacy and ethics, and provenance in terms of who you are and what you value, crowdfunding's kicked off again in a big way. So that's something that's worth you thinking about, not just in isolation, but see who you can collaborate with on this. There is a really, really useful link here. It's brilliant. Kickstarter, 70 ideas for how to fund your creative work and pay yourself in quarantine. And it breaks down by artist group. So if you're a musician, a comedian, a writer, there is something to help you fundraise or think about how to generate money in this, you know, during this pandemic. And also there are some other resources I've put here around how, just to help you understand around crowdfunding and what to do. And also, like I say, don't just think domestically, because we're in a global crisis and situation, but also in a global space of connectivity and ideas and sharing. And so Europe, there's money coming out of the EU as well. So have a look and see what will be of value to you as an artist. So literally we're winding down soon. So any questions at this moment? And I'll come back and you can see my face and you can ask me some stuff because we started.
One question.
Yes.
From Andrew, who is, I think.
Oh, hi, Andrew.
He said, what is your favorite or what do you think has given you the best outreach in terms of social media channels?
Good question. And there isn't one answer alone. I have found, okay, so we're on Facebook, we are on Instagram, and we're on Twitter. And what I've found is Twitter has, in terms of our brand in relation to integrity, original thinking and follow through, I would say Twitter. But also it helps that I like the platform and it fits my temperament. And what I found with Instagram after initial sort of stalling in a way, Instagram has, so I think in terms of getting things done and strategically and to move actions and thoughts and ideas from the online space into IRL, into real life, Twitter for me. So I think it's a very strong strategic tool. In terms of building communities, and also it's good for promoting your events and everything else, and I think brand awareness, Twitter is very, very strong at that. So people will, so for example, you know, some of the stuff that we've done recently pre-lockdown, we've been approached because they obviously, like I said before, Andrew, I think before you joined us, people watch you. There's, you know, they're the silent followers. You know, they support you, they retweet you. They may not comment, but they observe and they look at how you do things. And as a result of that, when there's something that comes up that will be of value and they see that you see your added value, they contact you through DMs. And the amount of relationships I've built offline in partnerships that have led to specific projects that we're all passionate about, that's been Twitter. I think in terms of you as an artist and a creative, I think it used to be Tumblr, for example, for poets, but I think Instagram is a fantastic place to showcase your work. And also, especially now with Insta stories and the fact that now you don't only have to put something out there 60 seconds before it cuts off. You now can tap into IGTV, which means that you can show segments, you know, films for longer. So I think that IG now is taking up a whole different type of space that is of value in terms of your creative output, where you can showcase it in one place in a much more user-friendly way. So you can have your IG live discussions for an hour. I'd say between, I think those two are really strong in terms of what I've seen specific outputs from is Instagram and Twitter. For those reasons, yeah.
I think that's the only question we've had.
All right, so let me come out of this now because only one more thing I was going to do, one action. And I'll come off because I did ask you at the beginning about brand identity, so it'd be good to get some feedback on that. So it'd be really, really good is if you can just take a minute or two to think of one action that you are going to pursue on the back of this presentation. It may be something that you already started, but this is going to enable you to build on it. It's something that, and also think of things that you resist, because whatever you resist incredibly strongly is usually indicative of something that you need to do. So have a think of a platform approach or a feature on an app that you've avoided. And then build the action around that or explore that more when you leave here. But if you can come up with one action and if you're willing to share that, that would be great. And that is it from me, unless, because 12, I think we did dead on, an hour.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So, let's stop the share and actually have a look now. Oh, Andrew, hello. Olivia, hello.
Hi.
Hi. What a dramatic image. My gosh. Love it. Oh, wow. Wow, 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 wow. Hi, Shantae. But, yeah. So anyone, is anyone who wants to, early on the question about brand identity, is anything that you wanted to say in relation to that? And just one action that you'd want to take from the back of this?
Anyone like to share anything they've got? Any thoughts?
Hi, Joy.
Hi.
Hi there. Thanks very much for your presentation. It's not easy talking to nobody who's talking back to you. So
and all I can see is my screen. And I'm so interactive. I play off people. It's hilarious. Can you hear me? Are there any questions? Yeah.
It's fine.
And you can see me and I can't see. Yeah. Yeah. You do. Okay. So
I think while you were speaking, you've encouraged me to go back and look at the hashtags element, because I'm not very good at social media. I have just sort of tried to do the Instagram, the Facebook, and the Twitter, like you. But I didn't catch on to the hashtag. I saw other people using it, but I didn't catch on to it until literally about 2 weeks ago when I saw on Instagram that I had used a Twitter, a hashtag, and then suddenly people were responding to it or looking at it, and I was thinking, oh, hello. Do you know what I mean?
So yeah.
I'm not there yet, but while you were speaking, I literally listed quite a few hashtags. So I'm going to do that, and I'm also going to change this one element of myself that I've missed out on, a few things that I've posted and I need to add it. So I'm going to do that. In terms of the USP.
Yes, yes. I didn't sort of talk about pitching and profile. I thought, oh, what am I going to get into the hour? Yeah. But I think that sometimes, you know what happens? Because a lot of, there's a lot of people who are interested in things that they'd like to do. They may never do it. But yes, a lot of the time, how they talk themselves out of it is by acting as if, well, you had to have done the degree, you had to have done this and that. And when they hear, like, when I saw Olivia's background, I'm in shock. I'm like, I didn't know you had that wealth of experience in those sort of areas. And I think that if people have a flavor that, yeah, this is one part of you, but your journey came from like engineering, like in Yasmin's case, and yet now she's a children's author, you know, it makes it opens their brain and engagement with you in a different way. It makes you more approachable.
Yeah.
Because I think if you say I'm an illustrator, they're not going to talk to me. You know what I mean? And if they know that you know, like Yvette Edwards, you know, award-winning author, so approachable, worked in housing. And the amount of authors who started off in housing, the number of playwrights I know, Bonnet Barjé, who started off as a theatre maker and now a filmmaker, she worked in housing and she wanted to be an actress and wrote the roles because she weren't getting them, so she wrote her own. So, but if you don't know that story, it's a missed opportunity. Yeah.
That's cool. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I've got one more question.
Okay.
From Olivia, and she's asked, any children's authors or illustrators that you think have a good brand identity?
Oh, really good question. Let me think. I should know his name, considering I interviewed him. He was part, you know, actually, I'm saying that, but he needs to have a better brand. Tony, isn't it Tony? Finsey Park, and he's South African. And I will look him up. He's part of the Speaking Volumes, Breaking New Ground. Have you seen the look at Breaking New Ground? That's it. There's 100 children's illustrating authors of color who are in that. And he's ridiculous. He's really prolific. Sorry, his name's escaped me at the moment. But he's now moving into publishing. And he's managed to get about 90 books out. And he not only writes them, but he illustrates them as well. And he knows his brand. You know, and if you look at how people relate to him online, so a lot of people are interested in his work. He doesn't do enough online, but he's realizing he needs to. But I in terms of someone who's based here, I think the Americans are good at it. I think the Americans are good at it. I don't think, and I think Nathan and Dapo have done really well. I think they've broken it open. And I think the fact that if you don't have children, you know, most of my reference points are from the past. And I think that that a lot of that is because there is a mindset that children's books are, you know, people like, you know, Roald Dahl, people can, you know, Matilda, they come out like this. But what's happened is that, so there is a mindset that that's not something we do. So I think there is an open environment now for us to step in, and particularly women, because a lot of your children, sort of like, you know, you've got Jackie Wilson, you know, who's really good and she's very inclusive. And because even though she's an introvert, and a lot of children's authors seem to be, I'm not going to generalize, but, you know, because they're writing about a world that have they, you know, that they are carrying, and they want to inspire others. I remember she wrote Tracy Beaker. So I think that the stories more or less speak for themselves. So I think that someone like her, I think she's done incredibly well. But I think that it's a space that we that is there to be mined, and this is the time to do it, because people are looking out for authors like that.
Brilliant.
But I will let you know that his name, because I can't remember. It's Tony, he'll kill me. But he's brilliant and his work's brilliant. And I'll also send you the link to the video that we did that features a range of different children and YA authors as well, of colour.
Awesome. Brilliant. Is there anybody else that would like to say anything before we go? I know, Joy, you've got to run off. Okay, brilliant. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. All right. So, yes, but let us know about your one action, seriously.
Yes.
Good hour. So,
look how quiet you guys have got.
Just put your hands up. Did you all come up with an action? Because, JC, come on, you shared. So, hang on. Shante? Yes. Yes. Olivia? Andrew, I can't tell. I can't tell.
Cartoon pictures got.
Cartoon picture. No, sorry. But thank you all for coming out, you know, because I don't know about you, but this has been, Mercury's retrograding. It's been an intense week. And so if you think that this week, if you've had any sense that it's just been full on, all right, and you're glad for Friday and the bank holiday weekend, everything, particularly Mercury and around communication is in retrograde. So you're not alone. So obviously, disclaimer, I'm not expecting you to be into astrology and astronomy and planetary stuff. I'm just saying. All right, but thanks very much, everyone.
Thank you so much, Joy.
Bye. Bye.